coming together for the afternoon.
Take a moment to notice how we feel. It's not like we do this once or twice at the beginning of a retreat, then we just forget, put that aside. But rather, as we go along, it always helps us to consider, how is it now? This time of the day, this part of the retreat, how's the body? Heavy or light? Comfortable, uncomfortable? How is it? What's our mood like? Excited? Depressed? Confused? Clear? Peaceful? How is it? Through the days, early morning, mid-morning, afternoon, evening, nighttime, we get to know the cycles of our own feeling, the patterns of our own being. By getting to know them, we also learn how to work with them according to the way they are now, rather than just falling into some habitual pattern, some half-conscious, standardized way of doing, being. If the mind is dull and sleepy, then we need to emphasize more on the rousing, energizing side. The inspiring, the inhalation, the rousing. If we're tense, agitated, busy, then we need to emphasize more the cooling, relaxing, settling, exhalation, the out-breath that releases, lets go. Each of us has to recognize for ourselves, moment by moment, hour by hour, what's the appropriate, most helpful means of handling, working with the present reality. When you drive a car, sometimes you need to turn left. Sometimes you need to turn right. Sometimes we need to go straight forward. We have to speed up, slow down. This is completely ordinary to us. And it's exactly the same, identical, in terms of training the mind, working with this body, these thoughts and feelings, perceptions. Feeling the presence of the body, establishing a balanced, upright posture that's alert, free of tension, energized, but fully at ease. The more that we can establish those qualities in a perfect balance in the body, and the more they're enabled to be realized, actualized as attributes of mind. Those factors of enlightenment that are the qualities of the pure mind. Totally energized and awake, totally peaceful, focused, settled. We pick up the breath, or the inner sound, the nada. Taking an object to help ground the attention. To clarify the focus on the present reality. Feeling. Listening. This morning I was speaking about the active use of questions, inquiring to help dissolve the habits of identification. I was also speaking about how when we develop the faculty of listening, it also supports the quality of receptivity, of compassion, being able to listen and to receive, to hold all the different patterns of feeling, moods, memories, loves and hates. If we develop this quality of inner listening, training the attention to focus on the inner sound, it also helps us to simply listen to the thoughts that arise, the ideas, the memories, the fantasies, the plans, to simply listen, not pushing them away, not grasping hold. And just as the inner sound carries no information, there's no words there, it doesn't have a meaning in our customary way of thinking. To listen, to simply attend to the presence of that. And it helps us to learn how to simply listen and attend to the presence of our own thoughts. Not pushing them away. Not grasping hold. Not believing in their content. Those of you who are familiar with Charlie Brown cartoon strip, you might have noticed that when adults speak, all they ever say is gack, 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 gack. This points out the fact that adults never have anything meaningful to say. Only the world of animals and children is significant in that domain. So, in a sense, we can learn how to listen to our own thoughts, our important ideas, our exciting memories, nostalgia, our plans, to just let it be like the silvery stream of the inner sound, just the like the purring of the heater, the calling of the birds, just the gack, 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 gack of our own thinking. It's not so important. It's not so meaningful. We don't have to get regretful or stirred up, excited, involved. We can listen to our own thinking just as if it was the sound of the neighbor's radio. We didn't even choose the station. There's content that we can discern the meaning of, but we're not particularly interested. It's not particularly significant. But we can attend. We can listen. Without creating judgment of like or dislike, without pushing away or grasping hold, it's just present. And the open heart receives it, knows it, lets it flow through. So even though there's the burble of activity, just like the inner sound, like a flowing, bubbling stream, we can sit by the stream of our thoughts, knowing, listening, not loving, not hating, just attending, knowing. And in this way, we change the relationship that we have to the realm of thought. No longer investing it all with meaning and importance. Not resenting its presence or wishing it would go away, shut up so we can be peaceful. We find the mind can be fully, completely peaceful in the presence of thinking, just as it can in the presence of the inner sound, the presence of the purring heater, the cooler, the calling of the birds. Thought does not intrinsically interrupt the peace of the mind. It's simply to do with the way it's apprehended, the way it's received. In this way, we're establishing an open-hearted awareness, a knowing of the flow of perception and feeling, thought, but we don't have to label it as impermanent, impermanent, or not self, not self. Simply in the way it is being received and known. There is the recognition of its selflessness, its unsatisfactoriness, its changingness. If the attention is getting stuck on a feeling, a sensation, a thought, then the conscious application of the reminder, this is impermanent. Is this me or mine? That can be useful. Can help to prize our fingers off the thing that we're grasping. But if the quality of knowing, of vijja, is clear, well established, the heart is fully listening, attending, then there's no need to even apply those recollections of anicca, dukkha, anatta. The heart knows. Our mindfulness and wisdom, they know already. They see that, know that, understand that already. I made the comment earlier that the engine of skillful action, skillful choices, is this very quality of satipanya, intuitive wisdom, mindfulness and wisdom. Now this is endor, as we know. And Endor is famous in the Bible as being the place of a great oracle. Now, I'm not sure of the ways and methods and experience of that person so many centuries ago. But in this very process of listening, letting go of habits and preferences, letting go of self-view, and letting our actions be guided by intuitive wisdom. In this way, we're learning to be our own oracle, our own source of wisdom. We draw upon our own intuition, the feeling of the heart for the structure of things, to listen, to attend, to lay aside all biases and preferences and habits, to attune to the present reality. And then when we explore some particular issue or question, what's the best way forward from here? What's going to be of most benefit in relationship to this issue or that question? We can draw upon the wisdom of our own heart to help provide that guidance, that direction. Thus we are our own oracle, our own source of wisdom. That wisdom, that understanding, that attunement to the pattern of all things is already here in the very fabric of our nature. As Lumbo Cha put it, inside is Dhamma, outside is Dhamma, everything is Dhamma. So the nature of your mind, your body, your heart, how could that be intrinsically separate or different from the nature of the rest of the universe? As just this natural order, this way things are. So when we look into our own heart, we can draw upon its relatedness to the fabric of all things. Draw upon our own intuition. And out of that feeling for our connection to the physical world, the mental world, to all things, what arises is skillful action. Words and activity, actions that are attuned to the time, the place, the people. We can always consult our own oracle in this way, but it takes a discipline to lay aside the habits of preference, fear, desire and anxiety, to be open. To attend. Sometimes if we investigate, explore in this way, look into the heart and ask, what's the best way forward with this issue? Sometimes there's an immediate, clear realization of, well, of course, dummy, go left. Another time, what might arise is, right now it's not knowable, there's fog in every direction. It's dark and it's foggy, and you haven't got your glasses. Leave it. Wait. Wait till some light comes, wait till the fog lifts. Then it'll be visible. This is saying these words is not to encourage us to engage in a whole catalogue of problem-solving adventures, but rather to take this opportunity to explore how inner listening works. What are the effects of learning to unclutter our mind, to listen to thought, to allow the space of the mind to be open, limitless, bright. To learn how to establish that, to use the listening faculty, to learn how to not be entangled, absorbed into thinking. And then with the use of that skill, establishing that open field, and to see how it works when we need to explore, examine, investigate particular areas of our being. Why does this upset me? Why does that excite me? What's the cause of my feeling afraid of that particular person? Where does this come from? What looks like the best way forward? Again, not to encourage everyone to be creating more busyness, but we can experiment. There's a particular area of your being, a reactive pattern that you're interested in. You want to understand a particular tense or obsessive relationship. Then, rather than thinking of those things as being something that interrupts your practice or distracts you from your practice, you can use your practice to look, explore directly, to investigate the causes, the elements that are at work. If you try out this kind of investigation and then within a couple of seconds your mind is a confused blur of reactive activity, then best to just leave it, let go. Let the potent issues go back into quietness. But if the mind is able to remain open, attentive, unconfused, then this is an area we can explore and find great richness within. Ajahn Chah used to say often that if you didn't already know the answer, you couldn't ask the question in the first place. This is related to this same principle. In a way, we understand our life better than we realize. So when we find particular questions or issues, doubts, if we follow them back to the root, we use this kind of investigation, exploration, looking at cause and effect, we find where the question comes from, often we find the resolution for it too.